I keep going in the ladies' room here.
Do you?
Yeah. Did they switch them? They never did. I mean, it's obviously different inside, different anatomy to the ladies' room than the men's room, so they probably wouldn't. But why would I keep going
I think
in there?
We should, I think it would be interesting if they would just rotate them so that the women's room would have urinals 1 week.
They should.
In the interest of diversity.
Right.
If we really want to be a diverse culture in public radio, let's really mix it up.
I don't have a problem with it. I think the thing is that
just see a line of men waiting for a stall.
The symbol is not. I don't know if we have specific, you know, the gender symbol here for the man in the pants and the woman in the dress.
Right. Yeah.
I don't think the dress is dressy enough, or the pants are dressy, or they flare out a little bit.
Right.
Maybe the cool pants on the man.
I think you're right.
Because I do. That's what I'm following. I feel. But I guess I'm following the dress lady into the
maybe
the ladies' room.
You don't have to worry. There's nobody going to judge you here. We're not about labels.
Well, I feel pretty. You know, when you go in the wrong room, it feels like a real big
problem. Yeah, but there's nobody here to stop you, right?
No.
So,
but I went. I mean, I went in the last time I was here during the meeting.
Mm-hmm.
I went into the woman's room. You know,
there
could be somebody in there, and
right.
you just, you know, I blushed and everything. I was embarrassed, and nobody was in there. I don't think
it wasn't an issue, but you feel odd. Do you remember being a kid and doing? Did you ever do that by mistake for the first time, and you're like, you realized it, and you're like, this is a major trespass. You can't.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like you're breaking the law in any way. It's a different kind of thing. Like, you don't feel like you're going to get in trouble.
It's almost scandalously fun, though, when you first realize it.
Yeah.
And you get away with it. You're like, I looked into the women's room.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's a world that you are never to go in.
You're not,
you know,
that's
a
right.
room in the world that you can't get.
You kind of think that there'd be really, it should be completely other. Like, there should be something really interesting going on there that you haven't been privy to, but now you've dared break that wall.
Yeah.
And you should now have knowledge that you did not have before.
Right. Well, you do know, I mean, you
it's
do
disappointing,
know.
It's disappointing, actually.
You know that there's a difference.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know there's a structural, anatomical difference, not, you know, to the people, but to the actual room itself. It feels a little bit different. So you assume there might be other differences that you're
now,
not
I,
noting.
See, I think it should be Shangri-La. There should be something going on in there. That I have just opened up a world.
I agree.
And then I got in there and it's just toilets. It's just a stall and sinks.
Well, you feel like you're not seeing it, though. Like, maybe there's like a little perfumeria or there's a
couches. Are there couches? There should be couches.
Yeah, more relaxing, like they hang out there. Because I think when you're little, you do get the feeling that there's always a line for the women's room at the big events or something like that. Where
so naturally, but it's because people want to be there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. They hang out, they talk a little bit more, and they probably do. I don't know.
They do. I'm telling you, there's a false wall that if we pushed the right way, it would open up and there'd be palm trees and tropical birds and waterfalls. I'm sure of it.
The ladies' room.
Yep. I have half a mind to stop this recording and go right in there and look.
We should go in there and just hang out for a while because nobody's here.
We should do a live podcast from the women's room. And
that should be the name of the show.
Live.
Live from the ladies' room.
Live from the ladies' room.
Yeah.
Well, some people might say.
I still feel bad, though. I mean, I just went in there. I feel like, I feel like a kind of a lousy, like, there has to be some kind of deviance inside me that's not allowing me to see the dress. Or, you know, I'm secretly. Where's the cough button?
That's one thing they don't have. And they have it in the talk studio, the big talk studio across the hall.
For like Lauren.
Yeah. For
Virginia.
Yeah, for the live talk studio. There's cough buttons and there's, again, in there, I'm pretty convinced you push the right button. Waterfalls.
Yeah.
Palm trees.
That's sort of like the ladies' room version of this. This is the men's room. There's nothing here.
Yeah. This is the urinal.
Yeah.
Studio. Complete utility closet.
Do you ever do anything in those big ones?
A few times I've done some stuff in the talk studio when I've had to do interviews with more than one person, you know, you're two or three people in.
Mm.
But the problem with that is you need a separate engineer. These studios, you know, you can I can sit here and control. And I actually prefer that. I prefer to be, you know, at the board.
Right.
It's where I'm most native, most comfortable. Mm.
Have you been practicing for the fun drive coming up?
Do you not yet. I have to. Yes.
This next week?
They do. They actually, believe it or not, we have a rehearsal.
Yeah.
And you go in and you spend some time doing your best fundraising voice, I guess. I don't know.
Everybody does hype up a bit.
Yeah.
Which, I don't know if I could do that. When I listen to those things, I feel like that would be the critical failure. I could read the text, but I don't know if I could get the whole,
I'll tell you,
let's get on the bus and we're all going down to the game.
Kumbaya.
Just call us now.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. I spent years in commercial radio, and I had to do all those selling of things. You sell cars and you sell,
yeah,
whatever. What did we sell? Beer. We sold a lot of beer, a lot of cars. I don't know, whatever else. There were things that I didn't do because I didn't feel comfortable doing them. But when you come here, most of your time you're not selling anything in public radio, except a couple times a year you got to do the, we're selling ourselves.
Right.
Yeah. And, you know, I look at it this way. It's like I could be selling Chevys or I could be selling public radio, and I believe in it, so it's okay.
Does that create a kind of a high energy anxiety mood in the office during that fundraiser week?
If it's not going well,
Have you ever experienced that?
Not
because it seems like it always goes well.
Yeah, it's not well. I think, and there have been times that they haven't made the goal, but it's never been like catastrophically terrible. It's always been in the right window. Let's put it that way. It's in the window.
Hmm.
You know what I mean?
So it's not a big deal.
Yeah. I mean, and for me, at least on my side of it, I don't see all the anxiety that goes into in the back offices where it's, you know, is this going to work? Is it, you know, that tension, I think, is there's other people that worry about that.
Mm.
I think when it comes to the people on air, they don't impart that as much.
Mm. You know, we are going to talk about some of the questions from the last Radio Ghost where we brought up that.
Yeah.
But before we do that, you brought up the idea of the terrible news of the day.
Mm-hmm.
And I had this, I was thinking about this in connection to a book I just read. One of my favorite writers is this guy, David Mitchell, mm-hmm. and he has a new book out called The Bone Clocks. And
I've heard good things about it. What do you think?
I love David Mitchell. I don't think this book is, it starts off very well. You know, with he's one of these people that is sort of a pastiche author. Like, he mixes all these crazy things together. So this is like, and character. So it's almost like the book is always starting over. So you're halfway through the book, and all of a sudden, here's a new character in some new land doing something that you're like, what does this have to do with anything? Then it all gets kind of woven together. But this, you know, it starts off as this book, and you're following these different characters, and you really like them, and you really want to follow their stories. But mm-hmm. then, but there's weird things happening, you know, like there's some psychic phenomenon going on. And by the end of it, it kind of has turned into this weird. David Mitchell wrote Cloud Atlas. Do you remember the movie? At least maybe they came out.
But that's another very shattered, nonlinear.
Yeah.
Way of storytelling.
Yeah, and in Cloud Atlas, you know, you're on board a ship in the 17th century, and then by the end of the film, you're
in
the far future, and there's spaceships flying around.
You know how I feel about that.
Yeah.
We've talked about that.
That's right. You don't like sci-fi. So, yeah, you might not like David Mitchell. So this great human story, which gets really well opened up and which you're really invested in, turns into this story about these sort of somewhat immortal people who are battling each other. The horologists, who are sort of like naturally can reincarnate into other forms, and then these other
people.
That's cheating. Yeah, they're not the cheaters. The real cheaters are the people who feed on the souls, or in the book called Black Wine, of living people, and basically rejuvenate themselves by stealing souls.
Ooh.
So it's a battle between them. And as interesting as that is in some kind of way,
I like, you know, the concept, yeah.
The whole human part from the beginning gets lost in favor of this kind of cosmology of, you know, the horologists versus the anchorites.
Mm.
And I just didn't care. Yeah. I would much rather have stayed with the warm human people, even though in Cloud Atlas I loved this kind of shift towards this other world that was sort of science fiction-y.
And what you, for me, I don't want to go off on a tangent, but when you describe that, it sounds really kind of exciting, interesting. I like the concept, but I feel the same way. I think 10 minutes in, I'm like, meh, I've kind of lost interest. I've lost that. I like the idea of it. The concept sounds fun for a short story.
Yeah.
But then I think, do I want to go 800 pages on this?
Yeah.
And I don't.
And it is, it's a big book. I mean, it's 650 pages or something like that. By page 500 when I got that vibration that we're being sold, this cosmology, and I'm curious about it. But it was a cumbersome thing to explain in the book. You know, it was sort of like the rest of the book is almost explaining what this battle is. And you lose sight of the characters and you lose sight of any kind of relationships between them. And, despite that, David Mitchell is an amazing, amazing writer. And this is a book, I bought the physical book. You know, because he's special. I don't want it just to be a Kindle.
You have certain authors like that you want to hold.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it's like six times a year. Maybe I'll buy the real book. Like another author I like, Kazuo Ishiguro, who did the Remains of the Day, that made the movie, Never Let Me Go. And what was the, they made another movie. Yeah. But anyway, he has a book coming out in October, and I'll buy that. Without thinking, without knowing anything about it, which is sort of the opposite of, you know, I'm very careful about most of the things I read. Like, I'm too careful, maybe. But those two guys, I'll buy whatever they put out. But
anyway, it's like your favorite musician. There's certain albums that you kind of want the whole package.
Well, you know, U2 used to be, you know, U2 is they have a new album out, and it's
been... Aren't they just pushing it to everybody's phone or something like that?
Yeah, I saw it described somewhere as spam.
Album. I'm kind of bummed out to see that. You know what I saw, they talked about how they did this deal with Apple, and at the same time they were talking about the new iPhone, at the same time that... Then U2 comes up on stage.
Yeah.
And they all try to dress the same way they did 20 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, Bono still got the glasses. Edge still got the cap. And I know they're all pushing, 60?
Is it?
Well, I think they would have, maybe not 60. It's close to it.
They still look pretty good, though. They're
all in shape, don't get me wrong. But I just keep thinking, oh, really?
Yeah.
Can you?
Have you listened to any of it?
I haven't listened to the album yet. I don't know, sir.
A couple songs.
Any good?
You know, it's...
it's just Coldplay light. It's more Coldplay light.
I was thinking a lot about Coldplay when I was listening to it. But I think they try... It's mid. You know, they try to keep it rocking. Nothing really grabbed me. But the story about the whole thing and how it was sort of... I was sort of excited by the idea that it was free at first. I thought, oh, that's kind of cool. But then... there's something creepy about it, and I don't want that.
I think it's a big mistake to make it just show up on your phone. I think it's, you know, it's...
Well, unless I
it
mean...
It is spam. It's music spam.
Unless you love it. I mean, if it's one of those things that this is like the album of the year and it's free, I don't think anybody's going to be like...
But let's be honest, 35 years in, is U2 going to do the album of the year at this point?
I don't think that it's impossible. But I definitely feel like that they should only have done it if they felt like they had a bit of magic.
Yeah.
Going
it
on.
Feels to me like that devalues it a bit. To push it on everybody's phone. It's like, well,
it's a gimmick. They don't need to be a gimmick group. If they're going to do a gimmick, they should do something fun, like when they go up on top of a building and do a show.
Yeah.
That's fun.
I like that. Yeah.
You know, or just go out in some field and nobody even knows about it, and some kids hear music.
You know,
playing.
Do what the Stones or Springsteen do occasionally. Just show up at a club in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
With 20 people in it.
That's good enough.
Create a buzz.
Make it sort of an event for people.
Do something really like that. I think the big, I don't know, the big commercial, we're going to be on your phone everywhere suddenly when you wake up tomorrow. I don't know. You don't need to do that, number one, U2. And number two, it comes off as, like you say, kind of creepy.
I mean, it'd be cool if, if there was like a hacker musician who was able to get his little homemade stupid album onto everybody's phone.
Yeah. Suddenly a billion people have it.
That would be interesting. Especially if he was or she was like nobody knew about them, or they had never been able to sign to a record label. Nobody wanted anything to do with them.
And it turns out it was pretty good.
And it was pretty good. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they sort of like did this gimmick. That would be That would be cool. I need the cough button again.
Are you all right?
Yeah. I no longer cough right now. I babble loudly because that seems to get it out.
That's fine. Yeah, it gets it. Yeah, yeah. Pops the bubbles. Yeah. There you go.
Oh, but
yeah, I don't. I feel like I'm just. I can't forgive you two, number one, for Pop.
You can't forgive
back
who?
In the late 90s, they put out that album Pop.
Oh, yeah.
Just garbage top to bottom. But
was that the. What was on that? Was there anything that.
Yeah,
that
I don't think they have a hit from it. Ironically, Pop had no Pop on it. It was just awful. It was just a terrible. And then, you know,
And then Zeuropa?
Zeuropa in the early 90s, I thought was a really good album.
Wasn't that they were always kind of courting controversy with their albums? Like they
Octung Baby and Zeuropa, I thought were really interesting. They were kind of an interesting period. They were kind of mixing genres. They were doing things they had never done before. They're trying to get away from that kind of, you know, Joshua Tree image for a while.
Yeah, they're sort of like they were the conveyors of some sort of like catharsis.
Yeah,
you know, some sort of like post-battle catharsis.
It was like their Berlin period. Yeah. Like Bowie had, they went to Berlin and tried to, Berlin, and they tried to have not Berlin.
You have retrained your Berlin.
That's right.
We have a Berlin.
I have
here,
a Berlin,
and you have to get used to saying it that way.
But they were trying to do, and it was kind of around the time that, you know, after the wall had fallen, and it was kind of an interesting period of time. And but then they, you know, like every, and it, you can't blame them. People get old. They get older. You know, what can you do? What could they do that would be interesting? I don't know, but...
I mean, but I always think this. I mean, I know, and this is very... You know, like for me, when I've written a lot of songs,
mm-hmm.
and I know when I'm not in the right place and when I'm just churning something out, when I'm not connected to it. And, you know, they know that. They know that they're beyond their inspirational position, you know, where they're writing music that's just kind of coming alive as a kind of shared flame between them all. And that now they're relying on their technical abilities that they've, you know, but the sort of the heart's not in there and the magic's not in there, but it still sounds close to like as though, and that's the thing that a lot of entertainers, even writers, they get there where there's just sort of, they're so good at imitating themselves, it almost seems like the real thing. But you know, even a sort of a casual taste of it leaves you flat, you know? And I'm not saying that the new U2 is going to leave me flat. I want to try to listen to it, but there was nothing in it that as I did listen to those first two songs, it was like, that made me like, oh, I can't wait to actually do this more. Now I'm dreading it, you know? But one thing I was thinking though about when you were mentioning these horrible events, and as I was thinking recently about, as I finished this David Mitchell book, which I wanted to talk about with somebody who had maybe read it, is the things that are, you know, that are important to me, like, it can be stupid, like a television show. Often there's nobody else that I know that is watching it, reading it, experiencing it. And increasingly the things, and maybe that's the same, you know, I feel like that might be a condition where people are reading books, watching television shows, seeing films or whatever. There's a part of their life that's sort of connected up to the culture that becomes private, that they can't really, there's nobody there, nobody else is sharing it. But the world that we're all sharing together is misery. It's like Ferguson, ISIS. So it's sort of like where before maybe we all did read Dan Brown's Da Vinci Code and we could talk about it. That sort of shared cultural world is disappearing a bit, or it's kind of going down unless people like U2 stick their album and we all actually listen to it, then we could talk about it.
That shared experience is slipping away, and more people are just so isolated in what they consume. Well,
it's almost like what's important to you, you don't get to speak about with anyone because no one else is experiencing what you are.
Unless you're doing an online thing and it's online community, you're talking to different fans of things, super fans of something.
Right. Like,
but I think a casual fan isn't going to do that.
Right. I just find myself, you know, the things that I'm like, wow, I love this thing or whatever. I'm like, everybody else has their own world and they're doing other things. And I'm not, you know, like you can't really reach out and find I don't know, just these shared worlds. And then, but the real shared world is kind of this pyramid of terror, you know, that that we know about all these awful things that happen.
Right.
Or maybe ridiculous things on YouTube, like cats playing, where I'm like, yeah, I saw that video where the little baby bites his brother's finger and it's funny. You know, we've all seen that.
Yeah, but it's cats, like, it's puppies, kittens, babies. Yeah. Or ISIS.
That's,
or football, I guess. Football is a big thing for people.
Yeah, I guess that's sports. You're right. Sports is
sports. There's not. You're right. There's not a lot of shared experience anymore because we have this hyper isolated and hyper concentrated entertainment machine in our pocket.
And we have a way of being able to use hyper again, hyper locate the media that we want.
Exactly.
So
yeah.
I can watch
hyper-niche.
Binge watch a TV show from the 70s and do that for a month, but and then know that nobody else in the world, you know, has seen Kojak for 40 years except me. And so I'm all alone with that. And as much as I enjoyed it, there's something isolating about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or listen to some band that only three people know about, or you know, there's something about that the massive amounts of choice that leaves us all somewhat stranded on smaller and smaller islands, I think.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. We don't have that. Back in the, you know, when you had three television channels and, you know, everybody had 10 radio stations in a city and, you know, there was, when you had this kind of mass media stranglehold on everything and one newspaper and, you know, you kind of had that shared cultural experience whether you wanted to or not.
Right.
Yeah, you know, that's increasingly gone.
Should we get to the some of these questions?
Yeah, we had,
I should have studied.
You and I were talking about the fact that you know, we should do this podcast more often. As it turns out, there are people that are listening to it.
There are a few.
Because you asked in the last podcast, the last Lamplighters, you said, "Let us know if you're actually just downloading it, but actually listening to it."
This is it's live from the ladies' room. We changed it.
It's no longer a lamplighter.
Yeah.
What if we brought a lamp into the ladies' room? Is that allowed?
Lamplighters of the ladies' room?
Yeah.
Live.
Yeah. That's her double album.
Yeah. I don't think there's a plug in there because women don't plug things in. That's a difference. There's lots of plugs in the men's room. I need to cough again.
Okay.
This is horrible. And in the meantime...
I say we go right down the list here.
Oh, you have it on computer.
I have it on this monitor over here because there's like 10 monitors in this room.
Yeah, you read them off.
Okay, from...
what I remember
what's his name? Birdo?
Yeah, Birdo.
Birdo. I like that name.
Birdo.
Birdo. Birdo said, he responded to our last podcast, "I tell you, when I see you guys had a new episode uploaded, I was vocal in my excitement to where my wife had to ask why."
Why, Birdo? Why?
I'm going to ask you, too. Why, Birdo?
Yeah, why, Birdo? Yeah. It's so exciting.
Why don't you take your wife out, Birdo?
Yeah. And
then you have some more.
The lights just went out. Did
wow.
we just lose power? Birdo.
We're still recording. The studio's still on.
Well, we have emergency. Oh, they're back on again. Oh, did you see those, like, Foxfire? I don't know. I think there's some sort of building.
Yeah. There's a generator. I mean, there's a generator that comes on. Are we on generator now? See, that's the thing. You don't know. You're so isolated in these studios. The world could be ending outside. Everything keeps going on here.
Yeah. Well, the building could be on fire, and you wouldn't know until your feet started getting hot.
Well, the alarm goes off in here, but it's a strobe light.
I liked my idea of not knowing.
Yeah, I think Armageddon could have happened, and we're still recording. That's interesting.
Well, was that hall light on before?
I don't think it was it?
Because if that's on, maybe that's like the, you know, in case of emergency, put these lights on type lights.
I don't know. Well, if the world's still here, Birdo, we're going to keep answering your question here. What was
all right.
the question? So he was excited. That's nice.
Thanks, Birdo.
Speaking of ideas, I have an idea for some topics you should cover. Maybe something about the deep web or what inspires you guys in your creative work, whether it be tangible or intangible. How about talking about your favorite foods, desserts?
We can do that.
Okay, let's start with
let's start with deep web because that's going to be quick.
Yeah, I don't know.
What is it?
Yeah.
All I know about the deep I don't know about the deep web.
Is this like dark matter? Like a dark web? Like
of the web.
The deep web must be something we don't know about. therefore it is deep.
It's the...
I'm very shallow.
I feel like it's the place where if you know certain things about the internet, you can go there and get things.
You can poke around and find things.
Yeah, there's some secrets and...
That's the women's room of the internet.
Yeah.
That's the ladies' room of the internet.
It's
that's
like,
deep.
It's like advanced file sharing in the deep web.
There's no urinals there.
Or the deep web is a theory of some kind of... you know, dangerous organization that is doing things in the background that we don't know
some
about.
Some syndicate?
But I don't know.
It's the ladies' room syndicate.
That sounds like a really bad children's book.
The ladies' room syndicate? That sounds like something that when we were 10, like a bunch of my friends and I would have come up with. And thought we were really deep. The ladies' room syndicate.
Well, you haven't changed much since you've been there, right?
No, it's a pretty much. Yeah.
So we don't know much about the deep web, honestly.
We should have
studied that because last time whenever it was a month ago that Berto posted that, we both talked about how we didn't know what it was and we still don't know.
No.
But we should have researched
it. But see, that's how shallow I am. I don't really care. I don't want to know about the deep web. It scares me.
I'm going to find out about the deep web for the next
Lamplighters,
and I'm going to tell you what it is.
I see. It sounds like dark matter to me.
Yes, it does. Of a sort of a digital
nature,
the digital nothing of the internet. So okay, what was the other thing?
Sorry, Berto, if that disappoints you. What inspires you in your creative work?
That was too hard, Berto.
Yeah, that's basically what we talk about all the time. Your favorite foods or desserts?
I like Indian food. And I like all the food. I don't have any like. I mean, I'm not a grand gourmet cuisine
guy.
No,
I'm not. I'm very basic with most of my entrees.
Yeah,
your basic beef, poultry.
Fine.
Yeah,
we're
I like a nice salad.
We don't know anything about the deep web, and we're boring eaters.
Yeah.
Although
croutons on a salad would be
croutons,
not as exotic as I might get on that.
What about feta cheese?
Yeah. Oh, that's I don't mind a little.
What about olives?
Oh, I like I like just about all kinds of olives.
You know, are you not a dessert guy though?
I do like dessert. No, I like something sweet is nice.
Have you
nice
met
finish.
People that don't like dessert? That don't like cookies and cake and stuff like or candy?
They don't like sweet things.
What is that?
Yeah.
Is that a
well, you can't,
like they're trying to be healthy?
You know, they're from the deep web. You can't trust them. You can't trust those people. But I bet you they know about the ladies' room.
They could. Maybe that's where their interests lie.
That could be it.
Those deviants.
No, my favorite, do you like sweet things or salty things better? Like if you had to choose.
As you get older, you go more toward the salt, I think. But I do like this. I like a little, I like sweet and salt together, sort of.
I like a good, nice piece of cake.
By the end of
your
time on the planet, you're just down to peanut brittle. You know? You're moving towards salt, but you're hanging on to the childish wonderment of sweet. But, I mean, cake, pie, pecan pie is my
pecan pie
is delicious to me. Mm-hmm. Coconut cake, coconut frosting cake.
I don't enjoy coconut.
Oh, that's
wrong.
I can't
do that. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. No, I like a light topping, like some whipped cream, something like that. Like if I had a hot fudge sundae with the whipped cream topping, a little cherry. Maybe. I don't like the nuts on that.
I do like the nuts.
I like nuts, but I don't like them on my ice cream.
I love them.
Maybe a little chocolate sprinkles or the Jimmies.
Hmm. You know,
we call them Jimmies in New England. Have you noticed that? And I guess in other places, that's a regional thing.
Well, it's kind of like, what's the thing for this? A grinder. You know, some people call subs grinders.
Yeah.
There's a whole hoagie. There's a bit of a language
We call
difference.
Them subs here in the Northeast.
Yeah.
Where do they call them grinders?
That may be Midwest, along with hoagie. My grandfather always called everything a hoagie, which I found sort of repulsive. Like it's a repulsive sounding thing.
Yeah.
Like I don't even want to describe what I imagine hanging out of that sandwich, but it doesn't.
Yeah.
I no longer wanted a hoagie after
the sub makes sense. It's a submarine sandwich. You know, it looks like a submarine.
It's cool.
I'm eating a submarine sandwich.
It's like calling a sandwich, like a littler one, a jet.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to have a jet. It's a vehicle. That's a cool vehicle.
It's space agey.
Yeah, sub.
Yeah,
you know, it's like you're gonna sort of descend into the ground with it and eat it like a mole.
Mm-hmm. Like atomic hot balls. Yeah. Like why wouldn't you want an atomic? Everybody wants an atomic.
Oh yeah, atomic anything.
Yeah,
What about candy? Do you like candy?
Well, not as much now as an adult. Oh. Although I still like a candy bar. Like I'd still eat a Snickers.
Mm. What about?
I don't think I like a candy, like a hard candy. I don't enjoy those anymore. I used to.
Spice Drops, Swedish Fish, Twizzlers. I love those, by the way.
A Swedish fish, I could probably still go for a package of Swedish fish. Not a bad thing. I guess if it doesn't have like chocolate or nuts in it, I probably don't go for it anymore. I used to. I mean, when I was a kid, I would eat any kind of candy. I loved it. But no, I don't really like candy anymore. You still do?
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, if I go to a movie, I love to like have some Twizzlers or spice drops or whatever they're called.
Yeah, I'm pretty much a standard popcorn guy at the movies. I still enjoy I'd have to have popcorn at the movies.
I love that popcorn, but it makes me feel really gross.
Yeah, well, it is. It's a gross thing. Whatever that chemical butter they put on it is pretty.
I feel like as you're eating it from the ceiling, a little sprinkler has opened up and it's dropping butter fat on your head.
That's my baby. It could be happening.
I just feel, and the same
is pretty dark in there.
When you go into McDonald's, I don't know if you eat a McDonald's or Burger King.
I really don't anymore. No. Every once in a while with the kids, they'll go in.
You just come away coated in cooking oils.
It's very greasy.
It just can't get off you.
The problem with going to a fast food joint, and it's not that because I really enjoy fast food, but I can't eat it anymore the older I get because I just feel like I can't do anything the rest of the day. Like I'm in a coma.
Old man.
Food coma.
Yeah.
You know, you just, I can't. And I love cheeseburgers. I like some French fries and stuff, but I can't eat the fast food stuff. I don't know why. Like if you go to a restaurant and you get a good Angus burger, you know, I feel fine. But if I go to a fast food joint, for some reason, I feel awful after eating it.
Well, their stuff is different than, you know.
Yeah,
you know,
it is.
It's very highly contrived, their food.
Yeah.
And it does something weird to your...
To your innards.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't eat it very often anymore. Yeah.
So what was desserts, candies?
A good pizza. I love a good pizza.
Yeah.
And you put some good toppings on it. A good thin crust pizza with like some green peppers, some broccoli.
Broccoli?
Yeah, I like broccoli on pizza. Yeah.
Why?
Yeah, I like broccoli on pizza.
That just seems but, like I mean, a
even,
big...
Even
like
if it's just a cheese pizza, though, if it's a good quality pizza, I like pizza.
Straight
pizza.
Simple.
Yeah.
I don't have any other foods.
Well, okay, what's next? Talk about perspective on deja vu. Talk about perspective on deja vu.
He wrote it twice?
Huh?
Huh? Did you just say that?
Yeah.
Because I just had a little... Wait, do you have deja vu?
I haven't been diagnosed.
No, have you ever experienced
that? Yeah, sure.
Well, it's
you?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I have it a lot. It's weird.
Every morning when the alarm goes off, it feels exactly like the same day. Well, yeah, sure. Yeah, I think so. I think it's a pretty natural phenomenon.
But it's sort of like it's a natural phenomenon and it happens regularly, but you don't really track it or give it much importance. Unless it's sort of a, I mean, occasionally we'll have a complicated deja vu where it's not just a single little flash of like a word that comes in your head.
It goes
head
on
and
for several seconds.
It. Yeah, where you see a scene of some kind.
You feel like you're locked into a track.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or if you feel peculiarly like you have been in a room that you know you've never been in, like it just strikes you as familiar. And you're like, I've been here before, but you can't place it at all.
That's very, very rare
yeah.
that I've had that. I mean, I would, again, not that I've tracked it, but I maybe three or four times in my life that I've really felt that where I could say it's really the phenomenon.
Well, you can go into the, you know, I think that they probably, I don't know what they do, but they probably try to say that deja vu is really just a sensory experience and there's familiar sensory ingredients around you that you misinterpret as either a feeling of prior experience or precognition, you know, where, you know, I'm standing in this room that I've never been in before and it's familiar to me, but maybe the tables or the tapestries
or scent.
The scent
yeah.
or just my position in the room seeing certain lights. Maybe that's triggering some sort of place where I was, you know.
It's firing in some synapses somewhere that...
Yeah, it's like, it's almost like in my life in, you know, years ago, maybe when I was in high school or something like that, I stood in a very similar room in a similar way, and my memory was imprinted with that image. And it's like I'm seeing
it made
a photo
an impression
again.
For some reason.
It's a similar photo of something coming up again. Maybe even like I was nervous at that in that old room and I'm nervous again, or I feel uncomfortable in the same way and suddenly things snap together. But it's weird that we have that because it deja vu comes with a feeling. It's a mild, it can be a thrill. And of confusion.
It can be very visceral.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's strange that we're equipped to experience an emotional response to what is almost a psychic experience, but it maybe isn't, but it, you know, but it seems like we're geared to like having an emotional response to a possible psychic experience. And that seems strange to me that we're wired
like that. I
like that
theory of there's some kind of, you were impressed somehow in some way in a unique situation and that would somehow only come up in some very odd context of events, like you said, a smell or some kind of trigger, some kind of sensory trigger would pull it up. I think like smell, for instance, that really brings things back, any kind of scent or a sound or a combination of those things.
I mean, I don't know about you, but I tend to think of things like when I was younger, I was very rigid about what was real and what was not real in the world. So, you know, deja vu was everything could be explained away, from Bigfoot to UFOs to psychic phenomenon. And I was firm in my skepticism, but as I've gotten older, I'm more agnostic. I more throw up my hands and say, I don't really know. So when it comes to deja vu, I think on two tracks. One was the material is there to be resummoned, whether it's sensory or the shape of the room, or on the other hand, that, you know, time comes from the future and that we're living our lives backwards and we think that we're living them forward and we have experienced everything already. And so, and then sometimes we're given a quick little peek at that, or something in our brain gets jogged, or we're, you know,
passing through that dimension somehow.
Yeah. It doesn't mean that it's, you know, at the end of the day, you can't do anything with any of it anyway, you know.
Right.
I think it's fine to maintain a, you know.
It's like string theory. It's interesting to think about, but in the end of the day.
Yeah. Well, it's like,
you know,
what
are you gonna do with it?
Like they're saying, maybe the whole world is this big hologram. I like the idea of thinking, yeah, this is either a cup or it's just someone is placing a cup here and making me think there is a cup, but there's no cup, you know.
But it's at the end of the day, what does it matter?
Yeah, but you can have both.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's fun to have an ambiguous relationship to reality, because I mean, you know, what do we really know about anything? We know, you know, we're just a little bit more advanced than puppies, you know, in terms of our understanding of the world. We think knowing about gravity and about, you know, E=mc² means a lot, but I'd imagine that eventually, if we kept going as a civilization and kept learning and learning, all the stuff that we know right now would just be a little drop in the bucket about, you know, really what's happening.
Are we just one, are we just part of an atom in a chair leg somewhere in a great big giant?
Yeah, and who's sitting in that
chair?
Or
is there a science experiment that was being conducted by aliens?
At
the end of the day,
like,
guess what? Yeah, I still got to make some money to make some food, get some food.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, you know, you could say, well, does it really matter that this or that is happening? But, you know, you have to get up and live your life anyway.
Right.
It's fun to conjecture, but
you can't do anything with it. And it's also, there's nothing, you can't prove any of it. It just sits there like, you know, your own ghost across the room, possibly staring at you. Maybe you're making it up, but.
At the end of the day, we're all in a dorm room just getting high, talking about it.
I mean, honestly, though, when you see something like that, the, you know, people saying, science is saying that, you know, the whole world is just a hologram. I mean, that makes me a little angry. At the same time, I enjoy it. I don't like, because it seems like too much of a leap for them to to speculate in that fashion.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's especially if they're scientists. I can imagine, you know, me speculating.
Well,
that way,
I don't think I don't responsible science does that, though.
Oh, there's some responsible scientists.
I think reality TV scientists do that, but I don't.
They're trying to prove it.
They're all hologram?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They have a theory that, and I'm not going to be able
only
to
only the guys in the deep web and the ladies' room
maybe that's
know
where,
that.
Maybe this is where the deep web comes in, is the hologram theory of the
that,
world.
That, I think. See, now you're deep web stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is the ladies' room syndicate
deep
knows.
Web.
But don't this go in the ladies' room because then you'll be in the deep web syndicate hologram.
People that don't know about the deep web know about the ladies' room. That's the difference.
So you think they're two separate things? I think they're related. I think it's all related. The conspiracy freaks world, everything's related back there. There's some big four. There's somebody pulling the strings.
Mm.
There's the guy behind the curtain. There's the great wizard.
You know, has there ever been a conspiracy theory that actually turned out to be true? You know, like all these nuts going, they didn't land on the moon, and they're just, they clamor for it, and they clamor and clamor, and then finally they prove their case, and we're like, oh my goodness, that conspiracy, it turned out they were correct. Have we ever had any big conspiracy that it turned out that the theorists themselves actually were onto something?
I don't know.
They always just end up nuts.
I don't know.
Nutty.
That's a good question.
Like 9/11, JFK. I don't know.
I don't know. I think the jury's out in a lot of that stuff.
Is it?
Well, I don't know. No, but
I mean, after a certain point, it's just
it's kind of fun to keep it alive.
There's like a confusing blather of information, and you know, it's sort of like.
But again, at the end of the day, we all got to get up and go to work and get the kids off to school and get the groceries.
Yeah.
You know,
reality just isn't that important.
Feed the cat. I mean, at the end of the day, well, it's not that it's not. It's just, but I mean, it's almost entertainment.
Right.
Conspiracy theories. It's just it's something to do to occupy your time. It's a hobby.
I don't have that. I want to have a conspiracy.
Wondering about the universe. It's great and it's important to do scientific work, but at the end of the day, if you want to get really technical about it, you know, are we just atoms floating in somebody's mind? Well, yeah, well, still, so what? You got to keep moving.
Right.
Roll the bones, you know.
Or the bone clocks, as David Mitchell would say.
The bone clocks.
All right, what else did Birdo have?
All right,
another one?
Yeah, I don't. We've got more. There's so many. Birdo.
Let's be faster.
Yeah.
Let's be faster. That's a dumb thing to say.
Wait, that's not. We don't do. We're answering stuff from a month ago. I guess we're not very quick. This talk about the sound of my growing feet. Maybe rhubarb. I like that. That's pretty good.
Oh yeah, somebody posted. You know how there's like people posting the sound of trees growing, and the sound of
it's
the sun
slow stretching.
And there's
I think.
Sound. Somebody recorded the sound of rhubarb, and
I like that
popping.
I could imagine the sound of rhubarb would be like my feet.
What's
I don't know why I like that, but I do.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I'm gonna put that sound in here so that we can all hear. So this
insert
is,
rhubarb here.
Yeah.
Somebody with K-A-E-S-A?
Kesa?
Kesa? Okay. I know what it's like to make something for nebulous people on the internet who may or may not exist or care. Yeah? Because I think we're conjecturing that nobody listens, or at least nobody listens through the whole thing.
Right. Oh, yeah. There was sort of that, hey, if you listen to the end,
because
ask us a question.
Your stats tell you who downloaded it or how many people downloaded it, but not, of course, how far in they get to the podcast.
Right.
I think in my head, though, I assume that anyone who makes podcasts regularly for years must have hundreds, if not thousands, of adoring fans and generally living a glamorous podcast celebrity lifestyle. As a real broadcaster, I can tell you none of that is true.
None.
I know podcasters in real life, and that is not actually true, so I'm sure that I decided about, I'm not sure how I decided how that was true. Okay, let's see. She writes fiction. And one of the issues she runs into is writing is it's very easy for me to get distracted by peripheral characters who have motivations of their own. Although to be able to tell a tightly plotted atmospheric story concentrating on just a few characters without subplots. I understand that. I'm actually when I do write fiction, which isn't a lot, but when I do, I'm actually the opposite. I'm very super focused on characters, and I have a hard time doing a lot of tangents.
I would say if you're writing fiction and you are finding yourself getting tangential and writing about new characters, I would go with that. Unless you, before you began, you already had this tightly plotted concept worked out cold. You know, there's two kinds of writers. There's the people who know what they're doing from start to finish, and they have it all worked out. And then there's the people that the seat of the pants, fly by the seat of the pants people, and they discover where they're going just through tangents themselves and new characters.
But it's almost like trying to give birth to the characters and let them run.
Right.
Let them develop.
Well, I think it's, you know, there's a lot of people that are, you know, some people are very planny and blueprinty, and they get things done just by setting down lists of things, of how they have to do, putting all the supplies out, drawing pictures, you know, really coming up with a blueprint of whatever. And then they're like, I can't think like that. I just have to mow the lawn, or, you know, if I'm going to fix the house, it's going to be a crazy man's job, you know, where it's like I get up on the top of the ladder and go, oh, I need a hammer.
Yeah.
And I climb down the ladder and go back up, and I'm like, oh, a nail would be good. And it's just, that's how it happens. And I just think that's a natural, you know, the way that you approach the world. Either you can see narrowly through the tunnel of your own thinking to an end point, and what's important to you. Like, to me, like a tightly woven plot, I couldn't do that because I can't see it. So I can never write like a mystery.
Yeah.
You know, because I can never get my brain to
it's not formulated
around
like
in there.
Yeah.
I could write a failed mystery, you know, where actually it seems like it's a mystery, but whodunit isn't actually the important thing, because I couldn't craft the delicate shadowy footsteps that lead along, and then you're, you know, at the end where you're like, oh, it turned out it was the janitor. I can't do that.
My suggestion is if like you said, if that's your natural inclination, okay, so is to just go with that. But if you wanted to do something commercially for some reason, if you were assigned a certain thing, for me, I spent years writing commercial copy, and that really focuses you. There's an economy of words that because you can only fit so many words in copy, and if somebody has to orate them, if you have to read them aloud, certain words, certain syllables just aren't going to work for that, so you have to write for voice. You could practice that if you ever had to do that, if you wanted to focus. But if you're writing, you know, you've got to write what you feel. And I think that if you're writing fiction or writing for enjoyment, creativity, then you've got to go with your proclivity to.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like if you're the tangent itself is, you know, it's happening because, you know, there's some degree of pleasure or curiosity that's making you go there.
And maybe those tangents become the story themselves. Yeah. Maybe what you set out to do, like you said, if you sit down just to write for, and you're off in certain directions, maybe it's because that was where the story needs to go.
Well, I think we have a sense of books or stories as being tightly plotted because the successful ones usually are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the big books of the day are the ones that are the massive bestsellers, you know, like the Da Vinci Code or like the Harry Potter books. They're massively plotted. You know, these are preconceived works that, you know, maybe there's an outline that's 60 pages long that preceded it. So it almost seems like if you're going to be a writer, you have to be a tightly, you know, you have to be that kind of writer, because those are the books that stand up and say, I'm important.
But you were talking about, you were reading Game of Thrones, the Game of Thrones series.
Yeah.
And there's entire worlds and ton, you know,
I almost get the impression, I don't know, I haven't read that much about it, but that book itself is, it, I think he knew where he wanted to get to by the end, but I feel like he just kind of walloped his way there while knowing a world. Like, I almost got the sense that he knows this world, but he's wandering toward an end point. Maybe it was amazingly, you know, in detailedly It's hard to adverbalize that or say adverbalize.
I like that.
Yeah.
That comes from the deep web.
Thank God. Well, I feel like because we don't know the deep web, that we're being tricked by it. Like we're at its mercy and we're playing it. We're playing exactly the game that it wants.
I think we're all electrons in the deep world, not the deep web. I think that's.
We're
not holograms. We're electrons in the deep web.
Hmm.
We're just zipping around the deep web.
Now we should break into song.
Yeah. Well, I guess that's really it for the questions. I mean, I think.
Well, thank you for your responses. Ask us more questions and we will give more answers, unless it seemed as though our answers weren't very good and then you don't want to ask more questions.
You could criticize us on the answers.
Yeah, that was a bad answer. You should have studied.
I felt like there was more than that, but I guess not.
I think I got some email questions.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Do you remember what they were?
No. It was a month ago.
Yeah,
so
a long time ago.
And I can't. Yeah. I'm never going to be able to find them. That's poor preparation, I have to admit.
Next time.
Sorry about that. Sorry about the poor preparation.
We'll try to we'll endeavor to be better next time.
That's what we always try to do.
Mm-hmm.
We always do. But
well, I think this is good. If we have some back and forth, some interaction.
Yeah,
it's motivating to me to know there are people that do listen and pay attention to it. Because I kind of got the feeling that we were putting these up, and then maybe people, because they're fans of you from Radio Ghost and from the Ron and Fez and stuff, and just generally know you, would say, oh, it's some stuff from Sleeves, or you know, they would download it, and they would listen to a few minutes and go, oh, well, it's not really, I don't know. Maybe they lose interest after 10 minutes, just a couple of guys yapping. But, you know, to know that there's at least a few people who listen to it and get something out of it, that's great.
Well, I think that...
it's motivating.
Do you listen to many podcasts? I don't listen to any.
Just a couple.
There's one in particular that I listen to,
and I don't even listen to it religiously anymore. I mean, it's every once in a while I'll think about it and I'll go and get the latest. Adam Savage, the guy from Mythbusters,
does
a podcast.
Oh, he does?
That can be interesting.
Huh.
Yep. He's very, I like him and his, he's got two other people he does it with and it's called Tested. I mean, it can be kind of techie, so I kind of lose interest in some of them, but then they talk about some other stuff like background and film and TV, just interesting. There's nothing I'm downloading regularly anymore. Every once in a while I'll hear about something, some subject, and I'll go look for a podcast. From one particular person, but then I listen to it once and I forget, and it's all gone.
It's a peculiar medium. It's sort of like, you know, people that make web shows or make like, you know, episodic shows and post them on the web, video type things. And it seems like it's a very closed kind of world. You know, there are millions of podcasts out there and podcasters, mostly... almost exclude. None of them are going anywhere.
No.
You know, they're not going to blast off.
No.
Unless you're sort of a celebrity person to begin with, like Adam Carolla or Anthony Cumia, who has his own podcast.
But, you know, these are people who have huge followings outside of podcasting, and it's just an aside.
Yeah.
You know, you can get a million people just because of, you know, your name. But they already have a million followers via radio or television or whatever their career, comedy. So I think it would be very, very tough to do an audio podcast or really anything online unless you were a name. And you can, even if you go viral, even if you did something like you did a cutesy video and you're on YouTube and it got, you know, a million hits, it's such a quick, it's a piece of candy. It goes down. It's cotton candy. It's in your mouth. It melts and it's gone. And
Did you ever see that the viral video of the guy who is being interviewed by his 12-year-old self?
No.
So this guy, his name is Jeremiah McDowell. He lives in Maine. When he was 12 years old, he recorded himself asking his future self questions. And when he got to be 30 or 32, he answered those questions. But he put his video together as a side-by-side where he's got his 12-year-old self and then his 32-year-old self. And it ends up being like a conversation between the two. It's very clever, and it got like 12 million views or something like that, and he was featured on the Today Show.
Sure.
I wanted to do a story about him like, you know, life after a viral video. Like, what do you do?
That's interesting. Yeah.
And so he makes very, very good videos. They're different. You know, he does Doctor Who spoofs. He's very funny. He's very clever. He's almost like an artist of the little film short. But he's definitely trying to do something with, you know, I had a viral video, now what? You know,
can I build on that?
Can it be anything else? You know, and I think that there's sort of a wasteland experience that he has right now, where he's like, what next? How do I convert that? Or am I just supposed to have fun?
Well, it's almost like unless you get picked up by some kind of production company that's going to try to push a reality show about you, or maybe bring you in as a, you know, to do your own series on Comedy Central or something, like, you don't get anything out of it.
Right.
I guess you can build a big following out of it, and maybe he can get, you know, every week somebody's waiting for his video, but can you do anything with that? I mean, as far as a living, or is that
No, there are people on YouTube that make money.
Yeah.
You know, and they're more, they more have a formatted type show.
I mean, talking animals or...
Yeah, or there's like a guy who, he does like video game reviews.
Yeah,
or
okay.
There's the Russian, the guy that shoots guns. He demos new guns every week. You know, and they have subscribers, and every one of their videos is viewed by millions of people. You know, and those people make a good amount of money from YouTube.
Okay.
I don't know how many of those guys there are. Maybe there's 10, maybe there's thousands. Don't know.
It's all part of the deep web.
It's not going to be us, though, my friend. So if you were thinking this is going viral, it's not going to go viral.
No, but I am, again, I'm really happy to hear that there are people that do listen and do want it, so we'll try to do it a little more often.
And thank you for listening.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So we're going to put out the lamp, or the lamp. We're going to just go off into the dark, let it envelop us, and we'll come back next time.
Goodbye, Rick. Well, we don't have a sign-off thing. You know how, like, when people do that thing, like, they say, they bid each other adieu at the end of a show? It's kind of an old-fashioned concept, but I like
Why don't
that.
We just play the national anthem and go to static?
All right.
Like the old days.
Or how about we say goodnight to each other as though we sleep in the same bed?
Good night, John Boy.
Good night, Rick. We'll say it with a little bit of sexiness, though.
Good night. No, I'm not going off to the women's room with you, if that's what you're asking.
Good night, Rick.
Good night, John.
Wherever he would go, the old lamplighter of long, long ago, his snowy hair was so much whiter beneath the candle glow, the old lamplighter. Not long, long ago, you'd hear the patter of his feet as he came toddling down the street. His smile had a lonely heart, you see. If there were sweethearts in the park, he'd pass a lamp and leave it dark, remembering the days that used to be. For he recalls when dreams were new, he loved someone who loved him too, who walks with him alone in memory. He made the night a little brighter wherever he would go. The old lamplighter of love. Now if you look up in the sky, you'll understand the reason why the little stars at night are all aglow. He turns them on when night is here, he turns them off when dawn is near, the little man we loved of long ago. He made the night a little brighter wherever.